Hello there. We'd like to welcome you to the virtual kitchen table. We're Erin from Everlearning, Ashley from Ashley as Mama and Storytime Shelves, and myself, Hayley from Taking a Kinder Path. We're gathering for conversations about family life and home education, particularly unschooling, which is sometimes known as self-directed learning, or as I like to call it, natural learning. We'll be sharing our experiences and ideas, learning as we go. We hope you'll pull a chair up to the table and join us.
Welcome back to the virtual kitchen table. It's Erin here, and I'm here today with Ashley. Hey, Ashley, how's it going?
Hi, good, thanks. Hi, everyone.
Nice to see you. We have Hayley back, which is super exciting. So nice to see you, Hayley.
Oh, I have missed you so much, and I am so glad to be back here with you all. I've loved listening to the other episodes, and I'm so sorry that I've missed such wonderful guests and lovely conversations, but I'm glad to be back. So, hello.
Perfect. Yeah. I think some of those guests might be willing to come back too, right?
So, yes. That would be cool. Yeah.
That would be good. And then we have Sue Elvis again today, who we've chatted about things at least two other times, maybe three. So always good to have you back.
Thank you, Erin. I was really excited when you asked me if I wanted to be part of another episode, especially when you told me the topic. I think we're going to have a wonderful conversation today, and I'm especially excited because Hayley's back.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yeah, well, and it's perfect. It's perfect, Hayley, that you're back today because as I had said to you, we weren't sure whether you would be, but we wanted to talk. We were going to be talking about a piece of your writing anyway. So, you know, now here you are hearing and talking about your own piece of writing. But a blog post of yours that I always enjoy your writing, but this one in particular, I remember when it came into my inbox, I was particularly excited about it, I think is maybe the right word. And so the post is called Unschooling, A Voyage of Discovery. And I guess what I liked about it, Hayley, is the idea that it's a metaphor and it's kind of written in metaphor. And to me, the whole piece is this idea of the crew and the family, you know, the family being made up of the captain, who's the parent, and the crew. And so it really gave a sense of like togetherness, and yet it also acknowledges like individuality. So it's a really nice balance of the two. But I think, as I was just sharing with you before we hit record, for better or for worse, I did an internet search. I think I typed in, does unschooling work? And boy, oh boy, people had some strong opinions. And I think what always challenges me is not so much that I don't think we all need to feel the same way about something, or we don't all need to agree. I find it hard when there's a misunderstanding about something. And so when I think about, you know, the many families that I know in person and online who are kind of moving forward in an unschooling way, what I read when I was looking at the answers to those questions just feels like nothing, like it's so different from what I know it to be. So a lot of the sentiment online is the idea of kind of leaving kids to their own devices. And what I liked about this, Hayley, was just it just really kind of spoke to the idea that we're working together as a family. We're working together with our kids. Our kids are often working together with one another. And then Sue, I mean, I just think you really came to our mind as someone to talk to this, because that's so much of the spirit of what you write about, is this idea of living together and working together and just kind of doing life together. And recently you've done a really interesting post, which we will link. I have to remember the name of it, but it's the idea that unschooling is not just about freedom, but that the word love has been coming up more and more for you. So I feel like that fits in really nicely as well. So that's kind of, I guess, a preface to this post of yours, Haley, and why I think it's not only a great post, but I think it's an important post for helping people understand what unschooling is and what it can be.
Well, thank you, Erin. Firstly, I want to say thank you for your lovely, kind words. I must say, we only had a conversation yesterday about me joining in today, and I went to read the post, and I did have a bit of a cringe moment where I thought, oh my goodness, I wrote this a few years ago. But really, that was about the writing. What I did like was the sentiment, and I thought, well, actually, I'm really pleased, I think, with a lot of what came across in that post, at least to you, Erin. I don't know what other people thought of it, but I guess when we look at things we wrote a few years ago, sometimes we feel like that, don't we? But I think when I wrote it, to be honest, a lot of it was in response to so much I'd seen online around the idea of child-led learning, which I think is a lovely idea on one level. But I do think sometimes it's used, that phrase is used as a bit of a weapon against unschooling families. The idea that children are leading the way and parents are just, nowhere to be seen kind of idea. Whereas I think you've just mentioned, to me, it's much more about being a team and being in partnership with our children rather than they're in charge or we're in charge. and I think... Yeah, and so that was kind of thinking about that, the idea of us being a crew was really, felt really powerful to me. But also the idea of, I suppose, parents in a kind of captain role, in a kind of leadership role, rather than being in control, because that's not how I see it. I think as unschooling parents, we do want to help our children to do as much as possible what they want to do. But that doesn't mean that we're not there, as much as possible. But that doesn't mean we're not there, I guess. And it doesn't mean that we're not giving them guidance. We're not offering them support. We're not, I know we're going to go through the post, but our role and responsibilities are really important. And I think that was what I was trying to get across in this post. Hopefully that comes across.
Yeah. I needed to read this, Haley, years and years ago when my kids were little and I heard about unschooling and I thought, well, give this a go because nothing else was working. And I thought, well, I won't have to do anything. And I was so stressed out. I thought, just let my kids free, just let them get on with it and all the stress will be taken away from me and I could work on my own stuff, maybe alongside. But then I realized that I wanted to share with my kids and all those interactions between us, conversations, watching movies together, discussing stuff. And I felt that I wasn't allowed to do that if I wanted to be an unschooler, because that would be getting in the way of my kids' learning. I'd be interfering. I would be a problem to my kids if I did that. And if I'd read your article about being a crew on a ship, I would have been so inspired and it would have been giving me a totally different idea about what unschooling really is, not this hands off, let the kids get on with their stuff, don't go anywhere near them because you'll mess up their natural inclination to learn. And I think we can get too involved with our kids, but life is meant to be enjoyed together. And we all have so much to share between parent and children. And yeah, I just rereading it. Well, I've read it a few times, Haley, and every time I look, I get excited. I think I want to get on your ship and go explore the world and be part of your crew. I think you'd be a good captain.
Oh, thank you, Sue. I'm glad that that came across to you, and it is, I think, the idea of us, just letting them get on with it is so far from the truth of, or the reality of our everyday lives, I think. For us as unschooling families, the conversations that the four of us have had and the conversations that we've had with the guests on this podcast all the way through the time that we've been doing this. I think, yeah, we know that is not what is happening, where, you know, that is not how we see unschooling, isn't it? Is it? It's just, you know, it is so much more of a team effort. And I think, you know, we've spoken before about how in some ways unschooling's not about doing less, it's about doing more. You know, it's about more trust, it's about more love, it's about more curiosity, it's about, you know, there's not that we're getting in the way, you know, not that we're around all the time, not that we're, you know, there's this horrible phrase of helicopter parenting, which, you know, again, I think is sometimes used to bash parents who actually care about what their children's needs are. I don't know, these phrases come up, don't they? They go in and out of fashion. And, you know, there's parents have a lot, you know, parenting is such an amazingly important, wonderful, enjoyable role, but it also is very challenging, isn't it, for all of us? And I think, you know, we don't need people, we don't need that constant criticism that seems to be out and about. And I think, yeah, I just, yeah, we just, the idea of us being a team is just so much more pleasant, isn't it?
Yeah. And I think on top of everything, I mean, I agree with everything that's been shared. And one thing that I have found specifically with your post, Haley, having it is it helps with something we've talked about that comes up, you know, pretty regularly as unschooling families, unschooling parents, of trying to explain to someone else what unschooling looks like, what unschooling feels like, and, you know, on the day to day. And I've shared, I know other people will share, like day in the life. Well, and I think we did an episode similar to that too, or maybe we just talked about it. But anyway, that helps, right? And you see how it looks different for everyone. But to have your post, I know I've referred back to it when I'm asked by someone who doesn't unschool at all, you know, what do you mean by unschooling? And for so long, I was like, how do I kind of paint this picture for you? And having this, I mean, I don't read the post to them, although I have sent it to a couple of people. It just helps me kind of explain it in a different way, this idea of being a crew and giving, you know, pulling a few points that we'll get into today. But I think it just helps because unschooling is one of those things too. Like, it's helpful for those of us who are unschooling to see it like that, but kind of like what you were saying, Sue, it's helpful before you start unschooling, or maybe at the very beginning, or if you've just never done it, because it's one of those things that until you're doing it, it's kind of hard to, I guess, have a picture of like what that actually looks like and what that means, because that's not what we see as a lot of examples of how families do life together, whether they homeschool or not. So
I think a lot of the work of unschooling, a lot of it is work that we do on ourselves. You know, it's thinking about how we can be the best model, I suppose, for our children of things like curiosity and of kindness and of trust, you know, how we can be somebody that they feel safe and supported with. And that, you know, and how we can be somebody that they trust, and that we can, you know, we can develop that two-way trust is such a lot of the work, I think, isn't it? Which, you know, we've talked about before, haven't we? It's about the relationships that you're building. That's, and those things, I guess, are very hard to put into words, aren't they? They're very hard. When you write your day in the life, obviously, we're all, it is much easier to write about what we've actually done rather than how we've been, I suppose. Yeah. And that, I think that's kind of the really tricky bit to get across, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Okay. So I think we're going to start getting a reputation for a podcast with very long episodes, because our last couple, I think, have been 2 hours plus.
Yeah.
And I feel like we keep trying, but, you know, it's hard to leave a conversation when there's more to say. So I think in the spirit of that today, so Haley, I didn't count, but you have quite a few, I'm going to call them stanzas. I know it's not a poem exactly, but it kind of is. It's kind of poetic the way that you've written it. So I would almost say, rather than paragraphs, the way this one is written almost in stanzas. So should we kind of see how we do? We'll maybe read a stanza and then discuss it. That might keep us on track a little bit, because I feel like we could end up talking. It could be a 3-hour episode if we don't kind of rein it in a little bit. So above your actual title, Haley. So again, the title is Unschooling: A Voyage of Discovery. There's a little kind of, I guess I'm going to call it like a preface. And it says, no fixed destination, no time to be back, a trip of a lifetime. And so even that, I had thoughts, you know, it's a short sentence, but I mean, no fixed destination. We could talk a long time about that, because of course with an unschooling lifestyle, we don't know where we're going to end up. We don't know where each of our kids is going to end up. And I think because we are supporting who they are rather than trying to move them to a set outcome, that's such a great way to introduce it, that no fixed destination. The piece that I thought of immediately was the no time to be back. And I think it's because the stage of life I'm in right now and the age of my kids, I don't think I could have imagined on back that I would still be thinking this way, that I would have become so interested in different things and so curious about learning new things. As you said, Haley, like so much of it is our own work, and I'm still doing so much of my own work. So I think on back, I thought, well, I'll kind of be finished as each of them get to be 18 or 20 maybe. And more, I just see that there's, even as a middle-aged woman, there's so much that I'm wanting to continue to learn on my own learning journey, but I see it with them as well. They're continuing to learn, of course. I mean, we know this, but the way that our systems are set up, it makes you think almost like you have to cram all this information in and you only have this much time. And I just find like there's so much that they are continuing to do with their own, I guess what I would call self-directed learning. But I haven't stopped either sharing ideas and keeping an eye out for opportunities. And then they'll do the same back to me as well. So that's what really came up to me about that first line, was just the timing is totally different than I would have thought it was. And it's so freeing because it doesn't all have to be figured out by a certain age. Like it's okay if it takes kids a bit longer to get to a point, or maybe they don't even want to get to that point. But the timing piece, I just think is really freeing to let go of that limit.
Yeah. I mean, when I read it yesterday, it's the trip of a lifetime bit that stuck out to me. And I think that's because, you know, as we've talked about before, myself and Erin and Sue, we've all got children who are in their 20s and beyond, I believe, Sue, that's right, isn't it? And yes. It really made me think about a lot of your writing, Sue, because I know you've written, I feel like you've written a lot about the identity of being an unschooling parent and how that changes you as a person. Would that be fair?
Yes, I think that when we were talking a little bit earlier about does unschooling work, and then you mentioned, Haley, about ourselves, and I think that as a parent, I've been looking at myself a lot since my kids have grown up. Does unschooling work? How is it affecting me? And sometimes we go by that criteria of kids. Did they get the job? Did they learn to get on in with people? Did they learn to be hardworking? Did they learn to be whatever? And we forget about ourselves. Did we, as you said, did we learn to be trustworthy? Did we did we see the world in a different way? Did we learn to love unconditionally? Did we learn to look at our kids with awe? And these are the sort of things I've been thinking about since my kids have grown up. Did I learn all that? And of course, as we continue onward on our trip of a lifetime, I realize that we're going to keep on. It's not like we've got to our destination in those sort of terms either. It's not all just about what knowledge have we got, but the people we are. And So I wrote a blog post of when Gemma Rose was maybe 15, and you were talking, I think, Erin, about we can list all the things that we do in a day. We watched this movie, we played that game, we did this bit of maths. And then one day I stopped and I thought, well, what did we really learn from it? Did we learn compassion? Did we learn to listen? And how you can interpret all learning. It's not so much the facts, but those really important things that are foundational and that can move. It doesn't matter what you're learning. How to explain? It's not just the fact you've learned all the species of trees in your local neighborhood, but maybe while you were looking at them all, you met somebody and you learned to teach somebody else all about that, or you listened carefully, or I don't know, getting off the top of my head, but a lot of the learning that we've done has been able to be reinterpreted in a different way, not just all the facts and figures that maybe school authorities, registration and all that are looking for, but those foundational things. And those things are timeless, aren't they? It's not that the kids have to learn this, this and this because they've got to pass this exam or get into this university. But, and we've got to do that by a certain age, which we don't. But that's what a lot of homeschooling is focused on. But do we focus on the more important things while we're on our ship, set sail as a team, working together? And what are we learning? All the things that I was looking through your article and thinking we learn how to be supportive and resourceful and looking at all the words I've highlighted, Hayley, to be to trust each other. And just to be curious and to be, enjoy each other's company. And I was thinking about if we didn't get on that ship, if we said, which I was told right back at the beginning many years ago, I'll live my life and my child will live her life and we'll live life alongside each other. And I think how sad that we don't, if we didn't have all those interactions, that life is meant to be shared, isn't it? It's, to encourage each other, to spur each other on, and just to have that pure joy you were talking about, Erin, about many, many times you've said things about your adult children, or you had this conversation with them, they strewed something for you, and you all got excited, or you went somewhere, and it doesn't matter that they're adults. That's the sort of thing that continues on past their school age, doesn't it? The dreams, supporting each other, following their dreams, and that keeps on going. But I've got a head here because I'm so excited about your article, Hayley, that I've highlighted all the words that just jumped out at me off the page, and I've gone down further. So sorry about that.
No, it's good. Well, one of the things I was thinking as well as I was sort of reflecting on myself, thinking I feel a bit like living this unschooling life has kind of retrained my brain a bit. And that whole thing about looking for learning and recognizing that learning is everywhere, and then you become sort of uber curious about what you're, you know, you have those days where you sit down and you think, right, I'm gonna record what we've done today, and I'm gonna reflect on that learning. And I, you know, and especially at the beginning, you think, right, what maths have we done, and what English have we done, and what geography have we done, and all that kind of stuff. And then gradually over time, you begin to realize, you know, really how those subjects intermingle, and how, you know, this bit of English or maths is actually geography and history as well, and kind of you realize all these. What's the word I'm looking at? There's all these threads, I suppose, that kind of are all, you know, it's like a tapestry, isn't it? I think, I can't remember who it is that uses that metaphor, but that there is some lovely writing in the unschooling world, isn't there, about this kind of tapestry of learning. And I think, you know, when we're curious like that, and we kind of, yeah, have retrained our brain to see the learning in everything, you know, it's not just when we go to a museum or when we watch an educational video, or when we, you know, the learning doesn't happen in those times. It happens all the time, doesn't it? And I think that is such a powerful thing that we learn, and then that makes us curious about ourselves. And as you were saying, I think, Sue, you know, the things that we want to learn as well, as you know, the things we want to learn ourselves, not just the things that our children want to learn. And I feel like it's, And again, as well, I suppose the whole idea, which I'm sure we'll talk about later on, but for me, I think the more I recognize that invitations are actually much more powerful than demands, the more we kind of that kind of idea, the more we sort of reflect on that in all of our relationships, not just our relationships with our children, that, you know, that affects our adult relationships, doesn't it? Our, you know, relationships with our friends and our family. And it is a life full of learning, isn't it? And that's one of the things I'm so grateful for unschooling for, I think, is just showing me that I hadn't perhaps realized before.
I can't remember what you just said there. Invitations are more powerful than demands. So I'm going to have to make note of that's one of those things where it's like, of course I know that, but just hearing you say it that way is a really good, it's succinct and it's a really good reminder.
Who doesn't like an invitation? We do like to be invited. I write to a friend every day and we sort of summarize our days and what we learned and the highlights. And frequently I would say, oh, I'm going out tomorrow. I have been invited by one of my kids to have coffee or lunch. And I use that word invited. And she picked up on it because she obviously didn't use it as much as me. And I thought, invited, we love to be invited, invited places, invited to go with coffee with our adult children, and invited to share learning experiences. We get excited, we'll invite somebody else into them, except sometimes, I mean, they might say no thank you, and we don't always accept invitations. We say, you know, I'm busy tomorrow, or it doesn't fit in, or whatever, it's not my kind of thing. But yeah, that word invitation, I'm going to adopt that one, Haley. Make that one of mine.
Lovely.
And we do it all the time, but to have key words that you can call upon, like freedom and love and invitation, invite. I think, yeah, I'm going to write that one down, see if I can ponder that one a bit more.
I love that. Ashley, did you have anything on that first line? I know it's sort of like a line before the title, so
I'm gonna hold off because I've got a lot of other points elsewhere, so okay. Yeah, because I know we'll have a lot, but thanks for checking.
We might just need to do a second episode on the topic, which is okay too, right? So then this sort of first line under the title, which says full speed ahead in a definite direction or meandering and drifting where the wind blows. So that gives such a range of possibility, right? It's like, and I think it speaks to life. Sometimes we are really focused, and then other times we are kind of just going with the flow and kind of seeing what comes up in life. And what came up for me about the full speed ahead part, because I think the meandering and drifting is what people assume. So what stood out for me was the full speed ahead in a definite direction, was the idea, I think it was the word focus that came up for me around that, and how sometimes as a family, we can have a focus. It doesn't mean that, that there's just no shape to anything that we're doing. It could be, you know, a project or a task, or sometimes we might decide to really zero in and study something together. Like it can sometimes look a bit schooly or a bit, you know, have some similarities to school. It doesn't mean that we don't ever do that. If it's something that's, you know, interesting or it fills a need for somebody. But the other thing I wanted to say is just when we think about the idea of like self-directed learning, how an individual child can get so incredibly focused, and I'm using that word in a really positive way, they can really go full speed ahead in a definite direction. And I was trying to think of a couple of recent examples. So I don't know how relevant they would be to people with younger kids, but it's just kind of what came to mind first. I think I might have spoken several months ago about my daughter was basically reconfiguring her room to create an art studio at the same time. But in order to do that, she needed to, there were a lot of different changes that needed to happen with furniture, her bed. She needed a new bed anyway, but it wasn't going to work. It's a very long and narrow room, so she couldn't find a bed that worked with the desks that she wanted. And so she was just kind of like, you know, I think I'm going to have to build my own bed. And for me, I was like, what? You know, you know, but it was so matter of fact. She's like, no, I think that's, if, you know, if I want it set up with these two things, I'm going to have to build a new bed. And so she did. And so she, you know, she ordered all her furniture. She did all the stuff, but it took so much work and focus because it's a long and very narrow room. So her measurements had to be to the centimeter almost to kind of make the different things work. And so there was this incredible focus from the design to the decoration to the actual, like she ordered lumber. She, you know, and my youngest son helped her a lot, as far as kind of getting started with figuring out the measurements in the wood. But for several days in a row, I would see her out in the backyard, you know, with power saws and power sanders and primer and paint and lugging stuff around. And it was a very, very focused project. And so I think that that's the piece that, but it had a practical purpose to her. And I think that's the piece that people don't understand, is that kids are absolutely able to focus on something, to put together a plan, to see it through from start to finish. They don't always, because different projects have different degrees of importance to them. But that was really fascinating for me to watch. You know, she's never done a woodshop course, or, you know, like in high school, I would have had to do, maybe it was elementary school, I had to do a year or two of, you know, carpentry or woodworking. Everybody had to do that. So she's never done that because it was never of interest to her. But when she needed to do it, you know, there she was. So that was what came up for me around the full speed ahead, because that was very much full speed ahead. There was just so much going on for that project. Yeah.
I love that example so much, Erin, for so many different reasons, but it just makes me think about how, when we talk about, and not to get off track here, but like, we hope our kids learn to learn, right? Like they just, when they come up against, like you said, she'd never done woodworking before, but you know, she had this thing she wanted to do. She focused in and she figured it out along the way, and not completely by herself. Her brother helped her, like, but she focused, and it, like you said, it took up a lot of time and stuff. And I think that's such a cool example. I think I thought about this, part of the post, similar, but a little bit different. It was making me think about that we're a little bit more full speed ahead in a definite direction right now as a family, especially myself and the two kids. And then I want to say, like, maybe this time last year, we would have been a little bit more of the drifting a bit, and that it was just... I think it's kind of goes back to what you were saying at the beginning of this, Erin, like sometimes it is full speed ahead and other times you drift a little bit more. And I kind of, you know, last year we were a lot slower. We had a lot less going on as far as like weekly commitments and activities and stuff we would do. And I mean, there's pros and cons to both, absolutely. But it was kind of like what unschooling allowed us to do was to slow down last year and drift along and see where the day took us, see where the week took us, see where the month took us, month after month after month. Not that it was completely, I mean, there were still periods of focus, but just in the bigger picture as to what our days and weeks look like. Whereas, I guess, what are we now? The beginning of November. And it's been since around maybe mid-September, beginning of September. It's felt more full speed ahead in a definite direction with a few different things. But again, thinking more about like the bigger picture as a family and myself and the kids with homeschooling. And that would be like the focus, I guess, would be connecting more with others, going to more, like committing to more regular activities and getting them together more with kids and me with the other home ed parents. So that's what kind of came to mind for me, which was helpful, really helpful, because it's been wonderful to have that full speed and kind of prioritize doing these regular commitments, but it's been exhausting. And I find myself thinking back to, the nice part about meandering and drifting along last year, because it was much more slower paced, and that allows for a lot of time to do a lot of different things as well, which I've talked a lot about on the podcast. So yeah, that's kind of where my mind went for that section of the post.
Yeah, and you're right, Ashley, there are benefits to both. And don't you find that sometimes that drifting period kind of allows the space for the right things to come up that you want to do full speed ahead, rather than just feeling like you need to be full speed ahead because society tells us we need to be full speed ahead? Right? So if you leave that space, then it's like things come up and you can feel whether they're at least a fit to try.
And we didn't intend to slow down that much more and drift along for that long, but it's what happened because it's what was needed at the time. And we didn't even really intend, definitely not to be this busy / full speed ahead at this point, but it kind of feels like what it's needed. And I'm curious to see how long this will last and when we need to slow down again and when things will shift. But yeah, it's, I'm grateful for, I guess, the flexibility and the freedom to be able to do that and to read something like this and feel like both are okay. Like it's, you're going back to what's working for us right now. And it's not making a decision that this is the speed we have to be going at all times. We can slow down as needed and pick. And what is really beautiful for the most part, I mean, it's not, I don't mean to make it sound easy, but we were able to, as a family, slow down. And it, well, now I'm hesitating because, I mean, for the most part, it worked for all of us. And same with being a little bit faster paced now, it's mostly working for all of us, which that's not always the case either, right? So.
Sue, did you have any thoughts that came up?
I was thinking about how we need both those, don't we? We need to meander and we need to go in a definite direction. And I think a lot of people looking at unschooling from the outside think it's all about drifting, that you just get up every day and you just take the day as it comes. And if you, horror of horrors, make a plan, you're not unschooling. And so the definite direction bit, I think that we all have things that over time that we're interested in. And if we don't go focus on them like your daughter did, Erin, we're not going to accomplish them. Your daughter might still be without her bed, with her room in a mess. If she'd given up and just sort of meandered through that project, she needed to focus. And maybe the definite direction has to be in the hands of each person, that they're in charge. If we go for a definite direction where the parent is always determining the direction, and that's where there comes a problem. But recognizing, maybe from our own example, that for an example, if I don't focus on my writing, I don't get my books written. You need to focus. You need to have a sort of a plan how you're going to accomplish that goal. It's important to me, so I can't drift through every day. And then as my kids grew and watched me, they had their own goals. We'll make music videos. We'll write books of our own. We'll do this, we'll do that. And I think they realized they have to focus as well. But that meandering period allows for the ideas to surface, and you don't know where you're going to come out, what you're going to achieve during, or what you're going to find during a meandering period. But I was thinking about your metaphor here, Hayley. I was wondering if you've got little boats on your bigger boat. You know, I was thinking, are they lifeboats? Are they dinghies? Are they rowboats? Are they rafts? Are they blow-up boats? But your crew, can they, on a meandering time, And most of the crew wanted to lie there on the deck, just in the sun, reading books, just meander. But somebody in the crew wants to go out and explore this nearby island and make a list of all the flowers on it, or all the trees, or all the shells, whatever. And so they get into their little, not tugboats, because they're the wrong boats, but maybe, I don't know my boats very well. Get on their raft and they paddle out. And with their notebook, their waterproof notebook, and they make all this list and they come back. And then you've obviously got Wi-Fi on your boat, Haley, and they're doing all this research and they discuss it with everybody. Do you know what I discovered out there today? Would you like to come with me tomorrow? Make that invitation. And how, yeah, we can have our own definite directions and we can invite people into our definite directions, or we can just meander, but they're sort of a balance. And also, I think, to be prepared to give up our definite direction if it benefits. For example, I've written about this so many times. It was such a big red letter day in our lives. Whales, we heard that there were these breaching whales on the coast, and we lived near them at the time. And I can't even remember what sort of whales. I just remember the excitement. My kids, I heard it on the radio, because in those days we listened to the radio. We didn't watch the, didn't get on the internet, because it wasn't in the internet. And I thought, wow, we could just throw away all our plans for today and we can go off and we can just see where the day leads. And we just got in the car and we went to the coast to see if we could find these whales. And I thought, well, what would have happened if we'd all just said, well, we already made the plans for the day. I was going to work on this and you were going to work on that. And we had a meeting here somewhere, but no, let's go off all together and meander our way through the day and see what we discover. And it was such a wonderful day. And I think, yeah, we've got to be prepared to maybe let go of that, even though we don't talk in terms of planning every minute of our days. We do get up in the middle of, we did get up at the beginning of the day. And what's everybody going to do today? This is my plan for my day today. I'm going to write, or I'm going to go out to the lake and take photos, whatever. But to give all that away, if another unexpected opportunity comes along and let's go out on this, go out on the boat together to go see those whales. It wasn't in the plan for today, but we can take a day off from our focused activities and go out and do that. So that's all I wanted to say about that, Erin.
That was good, Sue, because it reminded me too of, I think I've seen something you've written about, can't remember whether you were first reading about unschooling, but you read about some family that used to sleep in and then skate out to their mailbox or something. And you said, well, we don't skate and we don't want to sleep in. But it's funny how we can read something and think we need to pattern ourselves after something else. So anyway, that's what came up for me when you were talking about meandering, that I think it might've been a post about the value of having some intention and focus sometimes, that we soon realize that if we want to achieve our own goals, that it can be helpful to put those things in place. But anyway, I remember chuckling about that image when
I remember the post. I think it was because it's like, again, digging deeper under why people do things. Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, if I have to skate down to my long driveway, which I didn't have, to the mailbox with all my kids and we'll come back and make pancakes and drink tea and whatever. And if I didn't want to do that, how was I going to unschool? It got me stuck, because there were very few books. There was no internet and there were very few books about unschooling. And I couldn't get my mind past that. I thought, well, why are they doing it? And then that's why are people doing things? They obviously love skating. They obviously like getting up late. That fitted in. Maybe they stayed up late because, I don't know, they were night owls. They liked to watch movies together in the evening with their dad. They skated because that was what they did, but we might like to have run. It just was getting underneath why people do things. You can't really say, as we were talking about earlier, Our voyages will look different. Why do we do the things that we do on our voyage? They fulfill needs within us, don't they? Within our families. And your voyage, Haley, would be different to my voyage, which different to Ashley's and Aaron's, that we might even get on a different type of ship and we're going different places and we have different, we have a different dream about what our voyage is going to, where it's going to end up. But also, I guess we talk about, we don't know where we're going to end up, but sometimes it's good to have that definite direction to start with and then maybe be prepared to abandon it along the way if it's not working for us. Oh, look, I want to go to that place. But when we get halfway there, we think, I don't really want to go there. There's something else on this side that looks more interesting. Let's meander over that way and see what where we come to. We can always come back. We can always set sail for the original destination if we want to, but we might discover something more interesting or more in line with our needs at this particular moment. So maybe it comes down to all our needs as well. But yeah, that meandering and definite direction, I was stuck on that for a long time, thinking if I say that we've made some, I say plans, I'm not saying we sat down and wrote down plans for the next year, but I'm going to sit and write this morning. Somebody else is going to practice the piano, whatever, those sort of things. If I say that we know what we're going to do today, that someone would come along and say, hey, you're not unschooling. And I suppose it doesn't really matter, does it? I mean, that's just a label. But it just seems so important in some people's eyes to decide who's unschooling and who's not unschooling.
Mm-hmm. I think, yeah, I mean, if your child wants to become, let's say, a doctor, there's going to be certain hoops that they need to jump through. You know, when I say hoops, I don't mean that in a disparaging way, because I think it's important that doctors are well trained. there's a pathway, isn't there, to becoming certain careers. There are certain pathways,
Haley, you've got it all wrong. you just pick up odd facts from Dr. Google and do it all yourself, and you do it the unschool way. And no, sorry to interrupt you there. I think you're making a very valid point.
Yeah, I think it's I know of a particular family fairly local to us. I remember reading about their child that had gone to university to do a medical degree, and their family's approach to learning and living was very much unschooling, and they had supported their child to follow their dream, which was to be a doctor. And I think that was, I suppose that's one of the things I was thinking about when I wrote that definite direction. You know, unschooling doesn't have to shut off any doors. I think that's what's one of the things I think it's really important for us to realize, isn't it, that you you don't have to be, you know, I mean doctors have to do years of training, but you know, people qualify as a doctor in their 40s and 50s and whatever, don't they? Another thing, I guess, that as a society sometimes we get hung up on is the fact that you start things and you have to do things at a certain age and you must finish everything that you start, and that whereas I guess, you know, having that flexibility, you know, the reality is that many people do change their careers, don't they? And they do have, you know, they retrain and they, you know, and all that kind of stuff. And I think it's I was hoping to capture that idea that you could definitely follow follow a specific dream that you have, but you can also, you know, like you've all been saying so beautifully, have those times where you're not really sure where you're going, but you're still learning on that part of the journey, aren't you? And often as well, like you've all said, that is the time when a lot of new opportunities might arise, or new ideas might arise, or you'll meet people or you'll see things that will spark a new direction that you want to go in. And I think that's really powerful, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. I also think, Hayley, what I was thinking about when you were saying that about the doctor and going through the course, if you've been an unschooling mindset, you're going to be more curious. You're going to want to go sideways. You're going to be passionate about your subject so that you're not just going to stick to that course material, I don't think, because your heart is, you really want to do it. And you're going to make a nuisance of yourself, I'm sure, at university by wanting to know more than what's in the lecturer is teaching you today. So yeah. Because the unschooling mindset affects it, even though you're going in a definite direction, you're doing what school kids end up doing, you're doing what other homeschoolers, you've all got to this point. But I think that unschoolers have an advantage in the fact that they go into it so passionate because this is their interest, so curious, they want to know more. And so it in a way benefits them, in a way it doesn't, because I've been through this already with one of my children, and he got a reputation for being a nuisance because he was always putting his hand up, but what about such and such? And the lecturer in the end was saying, we haven't got time to explore any more than what's in this day's notes. Stop being a nuisance. And he worked his way in. He converted her in the end, and they'd have conversations away from the class about the things he wanted to know. But yeah, I do think that definite direction and unschooling go very well together.
Yeah, it's interesting. Sorry, Erin.
No, go ahead.
Just very, very quickly, I was just going to say, it's funny because one of my children at the moment is doing a course, and that an English course, and they had an assignment to do where they had to create a piece of writing. And the idea was that it was a creative piece of writing, but it was about something that it was about a real event. And she actually, my daughter was saying, you know, I'm a researcher. I really want to know more about this real event. Whereas in actual fact, she didn't necessarily need to know more about that in order to do the assignment, but she really wanted to. So she was actually spending a lot more time than she needed. I mean, she was enjoying it and whatever, but it was interesting. Just the parallels between what you were saying, Sue, just came to me so much, is that because she is so curious, and because she's so curious, but also she's a natural researcher, and she kind of wanted to know all the ins and outs before she put pen to paper. Whereas you know, she could actually have just done it a bit quicker, but it's just it's just interesting, isn't it?
It is. I was just going to add to that. I know I've already kind of waited on this one, but I'll just say something more from what each of you have said, Sue and Haley. I think on this idea of focus, it's I agree with both of you as far as, you know, if kids are coming at something, or anybody is coming at something because they have a genuine, authentic interest or passion in it versus feeling either pushed toward it, or I think sometimes people choose paths in life not because they feel pushed toward it necessarily, but they just can't really imagine any other. They think they have a few things that they can choose from. So I think the interest and the passion is, and then the curiosity, as you mentioned, Sue, is just naturally going to be lower in those cases. But I also wanted to speak to the idea that focus just for focus's own sake, I think the opposite can sometimes happen to what people assume. So there's an idea that this whole sort of idea of, like, I guess, self-directed learning or unschooling, or what people tend to think of as child-led, that's where they will fall short, that they won't follow through with something, or they won't have the self-discipline. I think that's what you hear people, well, if I just let my kids do what they want, they would do this all day. They, you know, you hear that a lot. And, you know, that example about the bedroom/art studio reno, I don't think that I would have had the drive to do all that. I'm quite sure I wouldn't have. I would have just settled for something else, because I would have been like, well, look, this isn't going to fit, so I'll just do this instead. Or maybe if I could afford it, I might have hired somebody. But I can almost say certainly that I wouldn't have been ordering lumber and outside with tools and doing all these things. And so I do see in kids and young adults, I guess, an ability to follow through with things that I actually think is greater than what's there for most of many of us who came through a more, you know, a life of being told what to do for years and years and years and years. We just didn't develop that muscle in the same way. And I think, like, maybe just on some subconscious level, I have a certain amount of resistance and I tend to procrastinate on certain things, where I do see my kids just, they don't always move forward at the time that I think they're going to move forward, but when they're ready to, they do. And, you know, I think, you know, I think my kids have noticed that as well. For example, in college courses, I know my one son who was often, they had a lot of group presentations in some of his particular classes. And he often seemed to be the one kind of gathering everybody's work and kind of putting it all together in the final PowerPoint, taking everybody's writing. And he had a heck of a time just getting people to send him their stuff, you know, and everybody else was coming from a school background. So if you were to kind of look at that example, let's say there were five of them in any particular group, the groups changed a little bit from class to class. It was very rarely the person, like the person who was organizing and able to get their stuff done in time, was actually the person who didn't come from, he actually did go to school a couple of years in high school, but not until those last 2 years. So it's very, I actually think the opposite happens to what people think is going to happen, but fear is a very powerful thing. And so it's a scary thing to kind of wait and see. I think it's easier to jump in and say, you know what, these kids might not be able to have the initiative. They might not be able to have the follow through. So we had better set some rules in place, to make sure that we kind of push them along. Anyway, so I just wanted to,
I want to hang on to that word resistance that you just said, Erin.
Okay.
And I wonder whether we can read, because I love listening to you reading my words. I wonder if we could read the next three sort of mini paragraphs and then mm-hmm. see where we get to after that and come back to this thing about resistance.
Okay, that's a good idea. And now let me, we're dealing with, I only have my one little lamp on here, so let me just brighten my light. There we go. Okay. So our next, so do you want me to read all three at the same time, Haley? And we'll just...
Yeah, if that's okay.
Yeah, no, it's fine. So our next one is, the deck can be busy and bustling or quiet and serene. No barking of orders, our road is on show, though the mess has a menu and the food's looking good. A mixed bunch, the crew varied in age and in skill and experience, little in the way of required routines, no set hours or chores or jobs they must do. Yet seeming at ease, sharing the load, relaxed and contented, they work as a team. Yet each on their own journey alongside one another. They look out for each other, chatting and cheery, at least most of the time. So there's a lot of good stuff there.
I think I loved what you were saying, Sue, before about the idea of if you plan as an if you're planning, then somebody might say, well, that's not unschooling because you're planning, and like the importance of focus in order to get things done. And I was just looking at that bit about there being no rotas on show. And then I say the bit about the mess has a menu. And I think in that, in my mind anyway, I don't, it's not very clear, but in my mind, I was thinking about the fact that this idea that we don't necessarily have rotas, but we might, not necessarily, we might have, but that we do have things, that we might have things like menu planning, which give us a kind of framework, I guess, to our days. And funnily enough, we were looking through some memory boxes recently, and one of the girls got out a rota that they'd actually done years ago for dog walking. So we had two dogs at the time, and one of the dogs was very energetic. He was only little, and he's a border collie, so he needs a lot of exercise. And then the other dog was quite elderly and didn't really like going for walks. So the idea was that she needed one walk, but he needed two longer walks. And they did this rota. And it was just really interesting to look back on it and see who had done the walking and to remember that time. I mean, so, you know, sometimes rotas, it's really nice to have a framework, isn't it? Like you say about the plan, to have a kind of a map to follow is really important if you want to get somewhere sometimes, and if you want to get certain things done. And I think it's that idea of not necessarily imposing that upon other people, but that being more of an organic thing that arises out of living in community with other people. And I think the thing, when you said about resistance, what came to me is I feel really strongly that freedom is it's a really important value to me, I think. And sometimes, like we've said before, this idea of freedom when it comes to unschooling, lots of people think, oh yeah, kids have all the freedom to do whatever they want. But at the same time, responsibility, I think, is also really important to me. And I take my personal responsibility seriously in terms of, I think, you know, I want to be a kind person, and I want to, you know, I have certain things that I want to do with my life, I suppose. And I want my children to have a good sense of personal responsibility. And so in terms of freedom, if we have the freedom to say no, then we also have the freedom to say yes. And I think this idea that nothing will ever get done unless somebody kind of makes other people do it is, like you said, Erin, is kind of often it's the other way around, isn't it? And what we actually do by trying to force people to do it is we actually just cause a whole load of resistance. And then people, when they've got that resistance, they can't actually think clearly about what might be the right, you know, not that there is one right thing to do, but what might be, you know, what they really want to do in that situation. Sometimes we're driven to say no because we feel like somebody else is forcing us to do something. It brings up that whole resistance idea. Whereas if we're, I suppose going back to that whole invitation thing again, if we're invited to do things and we can see the sense in why it might be a good idea to do those things, then we don't necessarily have the same level of resistance. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. And then, so the rota part, Haley, brought up, I guess, a couple different thoughts. One more in sort of the just parenting, you could almost maybe call it radical unschooling realm, and then one in the academic realm. So, but before I even say that, I have to tell you that, and Ashley, I'll be interested, as a Canadian, I had to look up what rota meant. I kind of knew, but then it said, when I looked it up, it said, I can't remember, what do Americans call rota? I can't remember, but we also don't call it whatever Americans call it. So I don't even know if we have an exact word for it, but I love that it's like rota. What?
Yeah, sorry about that.
No, you don't need to apologize. I love that. I love that you know, we're from different places. And so you kind of, it actually gives you an opportunity to look up the root of words. And so now I'm using the word like I, you know, like I always do.
So my idea, I guess, of that was like, you know, I'm going to do the washing up on Wednesday, and then, you know, say child one is going to do it on Thursday and child two is going to do it on Friday. That was kind of the thing that I was thinking about, I guess.
Yeah. Kind of like a rotation or routine that is like, I don't want to say legislated, but it feels like it could be top down if I'm right. Yeah. So it brought up a couple of thoughts. So I'll, because you were just talking about the dog example, maybe I'll go to that end of things first, which, as I said, could be more maybe in the realm of what we think about when people talk about radical unschooling and like the chores, you know, whether kids have chores or have, what do I want to say about this? I feel like I wrote a post about this. I'm going to have to dig that up. So I think what I notice a lot of when people will say things like, you know, I tried to give my kids freedom, or I tried not to kind of set a schedule or set a set of rules, and it just didn't work for us. And I want to validate that that might very well be true. I don't know people's situations. And I would say that, you know, when you're talking about pets that need care, or if you live on a farm or there are younger kids to be taken care of, sometimes there do need to be set. There needs to be a rota of some kind. But as I think you're speaking to, Haley, if we can back up and just take a breath and see what happens without jumping in with kind of dictating what that looks like, I think we give our kids a chance to rise up to that themselves and to figure it out. Or not that we have to stand back from it, but like, what can we figure out through conversation? What I notice with my kids is that sometimes a need is just so clear, you know, to an animal's, like a cat's litter box needing to be changed, or it's just so obvious that it doesn't really require me to say, okay, this is your job on Wednesday. And I'm not saying people should never do that, because I can hear people right now, I didn't write it down, nobody would do it. And that might be true. But I think that when we jump, I think sometimes we have to stand back for a slightly uncomfortable period of time just to see what comes up. So I think we have to value, I'm saying we have to, I mean, you guys can do whatever works for you. I'm thinking, I guess, for myself, I need to stand back sometimes and value autonomy and respect over something happening right that minute. And I think if we can just take a step back, it's quite amazing what kids will come up with on their own. I also wanted to add to that, and this is the piece I find tricky to articulate. Sometimes I think we have to think about what our standards are around things like housework and chores, because, you know, I feel like I could tell two different stories. I could tell the story of how, and it's a true story about how I see over and over again, my kids rising up when something needs to be done, usually without being asked, working together, taking on somebody else's task if somebody's not well. So that's one story, and it's very, very true. I could also tell another story about certain things that I do wish they had helped with more and would help with more. And so that's where I think that's the work that I do internally, where I go, okay, is that something that I should ask? Like, do I put myself out there and ask? Do I speak from a point of desperation and say, I need help with this? Or do I wait it out a little bit? And so I also think that when we're talking about relationships, there's never going to be one answer. And my answer next month is going to be different than what works for me, you know, on this particular day. So I just wanted to say that, because I think to live this way means you kind of have to get comfortable with being uncomfortable sometimes. And you have to accept that there isn't necessarily going to be one right way. You're always working with a variety of people and a variety of tasks and a variety of possibilities. So that might sound really muddled, but that's what comes up for me around that. So when I hear people say, oh, this wouldn't work for me, I'm like, I feel like you're holding really tight to a set way that this has to be.
Some people do try it, Erin, and I've had feedback from people, especially a few years ago on my blog, who said, I'm going to give it a go, and then came back and said, and this is more than one person, quite a few people, it didn't work. And I think it's like when I was back at the beginning of our unschooling journey, and I thought, this is wonderful, I won't have to do anything, my kids will go off and learn, and then I will go and do my stuff. And I won't have to supervise. I won't have to push them to learn. I'll just go off and do it. And I think these people, these families, the mothers, it was mostly the mothers I was talking to, thought the same thing. We'll get rid of, we call them rosters. not rotors, but rosters. And we'll get rid of all that. We won't tell kids what they have to do because kids will just do it naturally. They'll just get on and do it. And then, of course, they don't. They don't want to learn. They don't want to do the chores. They don't want to be responsible. And after about 2 or 3 weeks, the parents come back to me and say, look, I gave it a go, but life has disintegrated into chaos. And I have to take back the reins again and can be in control because it's not working. And I really believe it wasn't working. And I thought, well, what's the missing step? Why does it work for us and doesn't work for them? And then I thought the missing bit was the same with learning. It doesn't matter whether it's learning or it doesn't matter whether it's chores. It doesn't matter whether it's dog walking or cleaning out the pets, is that we're doing it separately. And we're not the team on the ship. And the parents aren't getting involved. They're the captain who's sitting there giving out the orders without actually being prepared to get down on the deck with the scrubbing brush and do the things as well. And I think, I remember one of my daughters doing a video interview on my YouTube channel once, and she observed I don't know how old she was, maybe 13, and she said, most families, it's the mother who writes the roster, and then the mother sits back and says, well, you do this, you do that, you do this, you do that. And she said, parents don't get involved like you do, me and dad, you know, her dad. And I think for anything to be successful, we have to start with us. That, again, we're talking about how do children change? What do we want our children to be like? Responsible, hardworking, caring. But first of all, we have to think, are we that as well? And do our kids pick up on that? Because I think sometimes we might look caring to people outside the family, but when it's in the family, often we don't show our kids that compassion, that sense of care and the empathy that sometimes you're tired, sometimes it's hard work, sometimes mum needs to step in and say, hey, I'll do that for you. And then the kids come back later and say, hey, mum, you look tired. I'll do that for you. And to build up those bonds. And I think that takes longer than 2 or 3 weeks. That takes a lot of time and commitment. And is it worth it? Or do parents give up and say, look, we gave it a bit of time. It's chaos. Not that they gave it time in the way I'm talking about, but they've lost interest by then and they just want life to get back to some kind of, oh, I'm going to bark out the orders here, no barking of orders. I'm going to get this ship shape again, and I can't stand living in a messy ship and to be the drill sergeant there and blowing the whistle. And I've done all that before as well, and it's not a very good way to live. When your kids do things out of fear or do things because they know you're going to explode any minute because they haven't done what you feel that they should be doing, or they're punished in some way, they don't get the rewards. There's a million ways you can make kids jump to and do everything on the roster. From the outside, it looks like how the ship is ship shape. But how's everybody feeling? What are the relationships between the captain and the crew? And what wouldn't it be better if everybody did it out of love and kindness and compassion and all those things? It would do it because every member of that crew loves one another and cares about one another. And they wouldn't let one member of that crew, whether it's a captain or a fellow crew member, go under with all the work. They want to step in there and see a need and help.
I think you mentioned earlier, Sue, sorry, you mentioned the word needs, and I think you were talking about I can't remember the context now, but about us thinking about everybody's needs in the family, and that kind of makes me think about when we think about the jobs that need to be done in a house, and there are jobs that that need to be done. I mean, we do need to eat, don't we? I mean, you know, there are some things that we can let go of, but, you know, we've all got different tolerances for tidiness and cleanliness and whatever. And there is obviously, you know, there's that element of having to respect the fact that some people don't see the same mess that other people do. You know, some people will look and, you know, I for one do not see certain messes until somebody's coming round, and then I see it. You know, it's not that I've been lazy, I just haven't seen it, if that makes sense.
Not important.
And yeah, I mean, it's so powerful when how you can see different things when somebody's coming round, and you think, oh yeah, right, you know, and that's lovely, and you get yourself all in order or whatever. But thinking about this we're never in order here. I mean, I don't know why I say that. But anyway, this whole idea of different people's needs, but also in terms of doing those things in the house, you know, you know, we do learn as our children get older, don't we, that certain people do have a tendency and they have a liking for certain tasks, or they have a particular they do things, some things particularly naturally, whereas for other you know, we're all the same in the sense that we're all different. Some of us find certain things really easy and other things we find really difficult. And that is, you know, if we can come from a place of compassion, recognizing that a certain child, I don't know, let's say, you know, never washes up or something, you know, there could be sensory issues involved there in terms of, you know, not liking the feel of the water or not wanting to, you know, the kind of finding the idea of all that dirty stuff in the sink. That can be quite challenging for certain people. And I think that's so important, isn't it? If we can also step back sometimes and think about what's going on and having that, I think the phrase, the benefit of the doubt, you know, assuming the best of people rather than the worst of people, that sometimes we don't do things for reasons that perhaps are not immediately obvious. They, you know, there might be reasons why our children aren't getting involved in certain things, certain tasks, because those things are just more difficult for them, or because they haven't, you know, but because they haven't noticed them. And that idea of us being the captain and being able to think about what qualities are in our crew and how we can help them to develop, you know, develop the quality, develop the interests that they're into, develop the qualities that they're really strong in, but also being able to support them perhaps in areas where they're, you know, they're not naturally inclined, and kind of working with them to see how, you know, how we can support them in that area. And sometimes that will be, you know, helping them to improve in a certain area, but sometimes it might just be accepting that those things, I don't know what I'm trying to say, you know, respecting, I guess, their individual needs and respecting their, you know, what kind of a person they are and what challenges they face as an individual. And I think that's that this whole, yeah, it's this work on ourselves, isn't it? And that curiosity piece, being able to stand back and really reflect on why things are happening, which I know you've said earlier in this episode, Sue, very much about uncovering the why, rather than always looking at the what.
I got a good example for you there, Hayley. For many, many years, I never cooked because I don't like cooking. And so, but my girls love cooking, and my husband loves cooking. He was the cook, but he taught them to cook. But I prefer to wash the dishes so I'd say, you cook the dinner and I'll clean the kitchen before. I do all the preparation, cleaning up, make sure the kitchen's beautifully clean as far as I can get it before we eat, and I'll help with the dishes afterwards. And that suited us perfectly. And then, of course, all my kids left home except one, and she's working late. She doesn't get home in time to make dinner, and my husband doesn't. And I thought, it falls on me. I've got to cook because we need, as you said, we need there's certain things that need doing and we need to eat. I'm the only person left. I've got to go back and cook. And that's been really hard for me. And to admit that I don't want to cook for my family has been, oh, should never admit those sort of things. It makes you feel guilty later on when you see people's faces that I haven't got enough love to. I do it, so I obviously do have enough love for my family, but it's not my greatest love. And I like what you said, Haley, about you find the people's strengths and what they enjoy doing, and you'll get more out of people if you give them the right job. And if they get to the point like I'm in, where you were saying about find a way that they maybe can, I think this is what you were saying, if I've interpreted it right, they might not like washing up, but one day they've got to wash up because they'll be the only one, like I've got to cook. And so, but they'll have to deal with it. But do you think it's, you have to deal with it ahead of time? Or do you think like me, I've been thrown in the deep end? I mean, I can cook. I cooked for years before we had kids. I just don't enjoy it. And I'm looking for ways I can enjoy it. For example, looking at new recipes, watching YouTube while on the kitchen bench while I'm cooking, planning ahead so that I don't get to about 4 o'clock and tear my hair out thinking, I can't cook anything today. What am I going to cook? If it's all organized ahead of time, I'm much more likely to have success and enjoy what I'm doing. So do you think our kids will also find their own ways to work around things that maybe they didn't do, like we don't have to make it even all the way through their childhoods, or they've got to have practice washing clothes, they've got to have practice cooking, they've got to have practice doing this. Do you think they'll work it out?
I think life has a way of presenting us with challenges that we, you know, we often rise to, don't we? I think that, you know, we don't have to work necessarily. I think there's a bit of both, Sue. I think definitely there's, like you said, about finding ways to make things easier. That's definitely a really important piece of it. But there's also that idea that, I don't know, we worry so much about trying to make sure I know for me, when my daughter went to university, that I remember thinking, have I told her everything she needs to know? Have I, you know, made sure that she's totally prepared? And obviously I could never do that because I didn't know what she was going to face. So, I mean, I felt it, and I felt this responsibility to have made sure that she knew everything. But also I did have to make peace with the fact that life was going to happen to her, like life happens to all of us. And when that happens, we have to, yeah, we rise to the challenge somehow, don't we? And that is part of our responsibility, I suppose, is to help to cultivate in our children that sense of, I mean, people say, don't they, about a lot of home education blogs and stuff, you'll read a lot of the idea that we want to, and I think somebody mentioned it today, the idea that we want our children to love learning and to get skills around learning things. And that is, you know, we don't necessarily have to teach them specific, I don't know how to explain this, but don't know if I'm making any sense at all, but I think we don't have to worry about teaching our children everything. And, you know, we're not in the business necessarily of teaching, but we don't have to explore everything with our children, because life will present things that then we will explore when those things have been presented to us. Does that make sense?
Maybe we have to trust that when that a need will motivate learning.
Love it.
When we
yes,
have
trust,
a need.
Exactly. Yeah, yes. Exactly what I was we trying will, to get at, Sue. Thank yeah. you.
Yes, yes. Ashley, do you have any thoughts on any of those?
So pieces? Many.
The resistance piece, any of the pieces? Go wild.
I'm hesitating because I don't want to get into repeating what's already been said, but it's actually really helpful listening to you guys talk about this, because I feel like I'm in the thick of it with an 11-year-old and an 8-year-old, and with recently getting busier and needing, wanting, hoping, wishing that they will help out more and step up in areas. And I've been thinking a lot about this and how I want to go forward with it. And yeah, so it's really helpful. But I think that is what I've been leaning into, is that I think as parents, there's a lot of pressure for us to Yeah, make sure we pass on all those things for our kids and that they gain experience and learn all these things, but also how it appears to the outside, right? So it's questioning what matters as far as like, do I care more about my relationship with my children than what the house looks like to other people? Or the example of their own like personal hygiene, right? Like, am I going to go to battle at making sure the shower happens before we go out somewhere? And sometimes the answer might be yes, sometimes it might be no. It's not simple, but I think just the reminder for myself that these things do happen over time, but you do have to lean into that trust. And I think back to when they were younger, we didn't force the manners, I guess, right? So we weren't the parents, or I wasn't the parent. I intentionally didn't say, make sure you say please, make sure you say thank you, and really stress about the kids always having the perfect manners. It was on my mind, but I'd thought enough about it, and I trusted that through modeling and because they are good people, that as they grow up, they'll start to say please and they'll start to say thank you. And they did. It took time. They maybe said it later than some of the family members would have liked. And same with, I even remember my eldest would throw, I think it was the lid of a yogurt container on the floor when he was really young. But I would just, over time, and it felt like a very long time, I would just pick it up and throw it in the garbage. And then eventually that's what he did. So it's I think this idea that yes, we want our kids to learn these things, we want them to gain the skills, but we have to trust that it will happen when it needs to happen, sometimes earlier, sometimes later. But that it really does take time, like over years. And I think there can be that pressure, and this idea that, well, they should be able to do that by now, or they should be helping out more at these ages. And again, I just try to, it's not easy to navigate and figure out, and I love everything you guys have shared, but just leaning into that, trusting the process, and that it really does take time, and these things will happen, and I'll just keep prioritizing the relationship as much as I can. Not always easy, but I try.
Yeah, I think that yogurt example is an interesting one because I think there's two, as you were saying that, it occurred to me there's two pieces of it. There's the piece that there's this working as a team piece that we think about, and so that pressure people have as far as well, you need to pull your share of that. So if you throw that on the ground, then your mom's going to have to pick it up, which we know that learning takes time, that it's not always a quick fix. And it's interesting too that people assume that by ordering that's going to happen any earlier, but the other piece of that, I think, is this focus we have on early independence. And so I've seen that being out places with, it might be like kids tying their shoes or needing help with a zipper or something on a winter coat. And I've seen adults become almost just really indignant that like they're not helping the child. Absolutely, you can fasten your own zipper, and if you can't, you need to learn. And I guess that type of thing reminds me of the yogurt piece where it's a little bit more work for us, but I think what we're modeling is that for some reason you're needing support with this right now. So maybe it's that physically or psychologically the connection isn't there yet to pick things up, to fasten your zipper, whatever, we don't know. Or maybe there's just something, emotional that you're it's still helpful for them to have help with something. Or maybe they're just not at a point where they're thinking about it at all. But I think when I think about things like that with my kids, I'll just this going back to the coat zipper, like eventually they do their own coat up. Like they just do. And I don't remember, I don't know when that happens exactly. But it's the idea, I think people are really indignant about people not pulling their like doing their share. It's a lot about fairness, but there's also that independence piece in there as well, that kids should be doing these things on their own. And I'm just not sure if people peel that back. I think it comes down again to this idea of fear. Well, if we don't force it, they'll never do it. Mm-hmm. And it's hard to wait, but typically they do. And I mean, I've had stuff with my kids where I've thought, I can't think of an example off the top of my head, but it's kind of like, you know, they're still not doing something, or something would be helpful. And so you have a conversation when you feel that they're old enough and they're developmentally ready to have that conversation. So you say, you know, it'd be really helpful for me if you could do this, or I'm not going to be around to do this today, or whatever. I'm not sure what the panic is, that, right? Because if it gets to the point that they're still not doing something, I find usually they are self-motivated anyway, at a point that it becomes necessary for them. But if not, what's the worst? Like, so you tell them later that it would be helpful that you do it. So I think, I don't know, I feel like we get tied up in knots. And I think a lot of it is related more to like daycare environments or school environments, and it's a carryover to the rest of life. Like, we need kids to be tying their own shoes. We need kids to fasten their own zippers, because, you know, we can't do that for 20 kids. But when we're not in that environment, there's no need to push that through. But I think a lot of that just gets transferred. And then Haley, I just wanted to circle back to something you had said, and I think you were talking about like washing up and sensory things and that sort of thing. And I just wanted to say that when we're talking about chores, I don't know about all of you, but I feel like, you know, I've always had this idea, and I think most people in our society have this idea of like fairness and equal. Everybody has to do an equal amount, and it has to be fair, and it has to be. And I think that by extending that grace and that empathy to different family members based on their needs, based on the particular day they had, I don't think we're modeling that somebody's getting away with something. I think what we're modeling is having that sensitivity and that empathy. And I think that kids can hold that. Like, not all kids have the same capacity, at least I've noticed, to do the same amount of work. Mm-hmm. Like, we all, you know, and Sue, your idea about cooking, like, I can see that in times here. There's things that my husband has a greater capacity to do than I do, and there are things that I have a greater capacity than him, and it's not always equal. So I think sometimes we're raising children for this ideal, but there's no ideal. Any workplace, any family, there's going to be somebody who maybe inherently has more energy than other people, or someone who tends to procrastinate more than other people. So, I mean, we can get ourselves all tied up in knots about it, or we can have compassion for people. And I think that when our kids see us not getting all tied up in knots, that just models the same thing to them, because that is actually real life. Because people's whole thing is, well, in the real world, no, in the real world, people have varying levels of energy and varying levels of skill and experience. And so in the real world, what you actually need is flexibility and empathy and grace, not tattletaling because somebody didn't, you know, load their number of boxes at the store. Like, that's not, and you can do that, but that's not really, you know, that effective when we're talking about interacting with other people or getting things done. So anyway, Haley, that's just what that brought up for me, is just, just kind of having that grace for each other.
Oh, I think that was beautiful how you said it, Erin. Thank you.
Yeah, no problem.
It was lovely. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and that this last part, and then I'll move on to the next point, unless anybody has anything else. But Haley, you had said they look out for each other. Just before that, contented they work as a team, each on their own journey alongside one another. So, back to this bedroom art studio reno, I'm just thinking about how my son just naturally knew how important this was to my daughter, He knew how hard she was working. He also knew that she wouldn't have the skills right off the bat to use the power saw, to use the sander, to do the measuring. And she did all of those things. But he just very naturally saw a goal that was important to her and kind of came alongside to do that. So I just wanted to say that too, that I think, I think when we're modeling sharing in our children's interests, Sue, I often think about all the video work you did for one of your daughter's music videos and how, you know, people worked as a team, right? And each had their own kind of role based on what worked for them. I just feel like that happens a lot. That's what that brought up for me on that one.
I think maybe we also have to feel needed. And that's why the music videos worked, because we made sure that each person in the team was an essential part of the team, that their skills, they contributed. They weren't just sitting on the sidelines being an observer, or we didn't give them a job that was a pseudo job. We gave them a job that was essential. Going back to what you were saying, Hayley, about finding the right job for people, that if everybody has a job and feels needed within the team, then everybody's going to work so much harder. When people say, doesn't matter if I'm here or not, then we're not going to get much out of people, are we? That go back, we've talked about a lot about need, haven't we? A need for something motivates people. And without a need, people get lost or don't do anything, or why work hard if you can't see the need for it?
That makes me think purpose too, Sue, that we need to have purpose, both in kind of who we are, but in what we're doing in particular instances. Yeah, sorry.
Even going back to what Ashley was saying about thank you, what's the need for the thank you? So that you don't get upset, or because we genuinely want to care about somebody. And it takes a while for kids to learn that. It's not just a custom, maybe. I'm looking here. You've mentioned about customs further down of the lands. But it's not just a custom that we do. Kids need to actually understand the reason behind it so that they know, so it motivates them to do it. But that takes time, doesn't it? And the another thing I was thinking about with Ashley was saying about picking up the yogurt container lid, is that, and what you were saying, Erin, about my mind's gone blank here. What could the child be thinking? I'm going to do this. I'm going to take advantage of my mother because I know she'll pick it up. Or will the child learn to think, my mother cares about me and helps me, and so she's picking that up for me? And we assume that everybody looking from the outside will say, that child's taking advantage of you. But it might not be that way at all. They're learning that we care about them, we want to help, we help each other. And hopefully they'll pick that up and reciprocate.
Sorry, Sue. No, go on.
No, I finished.
Well, I was just thinking then, as you said that, I was thinking about the fact that if we do show that grace and that compassion, sometimes there's a lot of external pressure on parents, and there's a lot of external pressure on people, on all of us as individuals. And sometimes when we get to see that example of other people letting things go, or being kinder, or being more compassionate, sometimes that gives that, you know, we can see that in other people, and that can then give us permission to do that ourselves. And sometimes, there are a lot of customs and social norms that when we really start to unpick them, which we often do when people start unschooling and they start being curious and questioning things, some social norms and customs actually aren't very people friendly. you know, and sometimes it's in, and there's a lot of pressure on us to conform to things that perhaps aren't very good for us. And often it, and it helps us sometimes, doesn't it, to have other examples of people saying, oh, whoa, hang on now, even though we're not actually saying that, we're just living our lives. But they, you know, you see that example and think, oh, actually, I don't need to worry about that so much because there are other examples of people not worrying about it. Again, I'm rambling, but I think we've talked about this before in terms of, I feel like we've talked about it in terms of people's dreams, you know, their kind of ambitions and stuff. The fact that I'm sure it was really early on we were talking about this, the kind of idea that when somebody else sees somebody doing something out of the ordinary that they've not seen before, it kind of gives you permission to think, oh, actually, I could do something slightly out of the ordinary. I don't have to do what everybody else is doing. I can think, you know, I mean, obviously people do think for themselves, but you know what I mean? There's sometimes
inspiring.
Yes, it takes that inspiration. Yeah, thank you, Sue. It takes, you know, that kind of that example from somebody else that inspires you to do things in a different way. And I guess all of us that have come to this life is because we've seen, you know, somehow or other, we've discovered unschooling, haven't we, from somebody else. We've just, or, you know, often we come to it and then we later learn what it's called. It's kind of just a way of living. But there's been, we've had inspiration for that from other people, you know, all of us. That's what, you know, we're constantly picking up on what other people are doing and saying, and that can give us permission to just do things differently to how, you know, we might have seen other people do things.
Mm-hmm. Just before we go on to the next one, I just wanted to, I think I had said I had jotted something down about back to the ROTAS, or as you said, Sue, the roster. I just wanted to talk about that from a, I guess, quote, academic standpoint, if we're kind of thinking about unschooling from an academic standpoint. To me, what I think of when, so Haley, you say no barking of orders, and then you say, or ROTAS on show. Though the mess has a menu and the food's looking good. So what that brought up for me is the idea that the absence of, I want to say curriculum, but I want to be careful because I know there's a real, people have that, the curriculum thing's real sticking point of like defining unschooling or not unschooling. And I know that sometimes people will still use curriculum as a resource, or a child might choose to use it. So I want to say maybe more of like a environment that's kind of top down around what we're doing today. So whether that's curriculum, whether that's something that the parents put together, but the idea that there's not a set sort of roster of tasks to get through in a certain order, a certain certain assignments or whatever to be finished by a certain day in the week of the week. And I think when people see the absence of that, that's they just think the absence of that. They it's hard to imagine what takes the place of that. And so when, you know, the line here about the mess has a menu and the food's looking good, it reminds me of the idea that, like Sue, I've referred to this post of yours before about the, I think it's the unschooling when we have a heart for Charlotte Mason, or when I can't remember, but Charlotte Mason is in there. And it's just, to me, I think in that post you talk about this, and what it brought up for me is the idea that we can still have such a abundant and like rich variety of content without having kind of like legislation about how that happens. So we can, you know, we can present all kinds of interesting art, and we can read living books, and we can do all of those things without requiring a narration afterward, or without saying, you know, this is, you need to do a write-up about this or whatever. And I'm not meaning to stomp on any Charlotte Mason stuff. I know that works really well for lots of people. I'm just using the example from your post because that really spoke to me, is the idea that you know, content doesn't belong to any particular homeschool philosophy. You know, when Shakespeare was writing plays, he wasn't thinking, oh, this is going to be included in a classical. Like these authors that are being studied, they were writing from the heart. It had nothing to do with a particular homeschool style. So I just wanted to say that I love that idea about the food looking good and that there being a menu, because we do still and can still offer our children a menu of things, rather whether that's through strewing, you know, in the specific way that strewing is often defined as far as kind of leaving interesting things in the path of kids, whether it's directly inviting, planning outings, we can do all sorts of things. And yeah, that anyway, I don't know if anyone else has anything on that. And if not, we can move on. But I just wanted to put that in there.
No, I love that idea, Erin. Yeah. Yeah, the idea of a menu, it's like the invitations again, isn't it? It's almost like this, there is so much richness in the world, and we can pick and choose bits and pieces, and we don't all have to do them in the same order and at the same time. I've just looked ahead to see how much further there is in this post. And so, and there is a long way. So I wonder whether or not we should revisit this on another occasion and continue our conversation. Yeah. How does that sound?
Yeah, it sounds good to me. Do you, I was kind of thinking the same thing, Haley, but I wonder if we have, and let me know if you don't, I wonder if we had a few more minutes, just because I think the next one might be a good one to end on. It's about having a captain and the captain's role in relation to the crew. Okay. Does that sound okay to people, or do you need to, what do you think?
No, that sounds good. I'm happy to do that. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Yeah. Let's do this one more. Okay. So this one is some seasoned sailors among them for sure. And a captain at times hard to pick out from the crew. Up on the deck, in the midst of the action, supportive and resourceful, looking out for the crew. And actually, let me just see if the next one is related to that, and then we can just, yeah, okay. I'm just going to continue on for a quick minute here. Familiar and trusted, the captain's their guide, pointing out landmarks and places of interest, preparing the crew for the weather and the wildlife, sharing the customs and laws of the land and stories galore of what's happened before. Okay, I'm going to keep going because it's all related. Just 1 minute here. Yet, while they've traveled afar and seen much of the sea, the captain's aware there's much more to explore. And even returning to well-known lands, there are bound to be changes they cannot foresee. And so just like their crew, the captain is curious and eager to learn. A network of captains and crews on the sea, they can ask for directions and help on their way. Okay, so those ones were all kind of related. So I just wanted to touch on that because I think that is the idea of captain, the idea of leadership and what a parent's role is probably one of the biggest misconceptions. And Haley, you've just laid it out like beautifully. So a couple of the points, I actually just put a couple of questions down, and I just said, where it says here, and a captain at times hard to pick out from the crew. I just said, are we comfortable as parents not always standing out from the crew? Right? Is that a comfortable role for us to not be in not that we're not in a leadership position sometimes, but often we are learning alongside. So is that comfortable for us to not feel we have to have the answers all the time? So I just said, you know, can we humble ourselves that we don't always know? And so I just found that interesting to think about how over time I've become, I think this came up actually when we were talking in the science episode. Somebody said, it might have been me, it might have been somebody else, that it's almost exciting now not to know, because then mm-hmm. we journey together to find out the answer. So instead mm-hmm. of our kids asking us something and thinking, oh, I don't know about that, I haven't got much information about that, it's actually, it becomes really comfortable, I think, over time to not know and to explore together. And then the only other piece I put there, so I say, but Haley also says, sometimes a captain at times hard to pick out from the crew. So that also indicates that sometimes it is clear that we're separate from the crew and we are in more of a leadership guide sort of a role. So
yeah, but we're trusted. We can do that because it's a familiar and trusted.
Mm.
That's yeah. Important word as well, that the captain is in, I say, in charge. I don't like that word. Familiar and trusted, the guide, that's the word. The captain's their guide. But without that trust, it might not work.
Yeah, and there are times, aren't there, where we can see ahead to potential things that can go wrong, perhaps. And I mean, thinking about younger children, I guess, simple things like when we take snacks out with us, because we know that if somebody doesn't eat, then they're likely to get a bit hangry, you know, and that might be us as well, not just our children. But some, you know, there is very much a role for us as parents of thinking ahead to try and, you know, to offset some problems that might arise, because, you know, we're gathering this knowledge all the time about how our children work and how we work. And so, you know, it would be remiss of us not to use that knowledge sometimes and to do some things to make life go a little bit more smoothly sometimes. And that's not us. Again, I think somebody mentioned that thing about, you know, children getting away with things. It's not that we're trying to. I don't know. There's this idea sometimes in society of us mollycoddling children, and, you know, whereas I think that it's a really genuine, wonderful thing to actually take account of somebody's needs and attempt to meet those. You know, that's a good thing, not a bad thing.
Yeah, and I think that that's a part of what builds the trust that our children can have for us as a leader, is that we can be like, I want a leader that I can rely on, and a leader that I know will be trying to support me, even if they get it wrong sometimes, but that reliable piece. I love this section so much, because I think what you said, Erin, at the beginning about how, how did you put it? It's kind of like a big misconception, right, about what it means to be, you know, what it looks like in a leadership role as a parent. And I actually took a leadership course a long time ago now, I guess, when I was in a leadership role. And it was really helpful, because before that, I think I had a very different idea of what it meant to be a good leader. And then I took that course, and one thing that it talked about, which I got from this with what you were saying, Haley, was that good leaders know when to let others lead. So the part where you said at times to hard to pick out from the crew, like that's such a key piece to me. And the kids and I even talk about that, and they know that it's not just me and their dad and other adults passing everything on to them, that we also, let them lead, and they are the ones leading the way, whether it's in like an obvious way or sometimes it's in a less obvious way. But I think so much, I just think there's so much value in that, and that it certainly doesn't hurt our relationship with our children when we step back and they're able to step forward. And I think you can do that with really young children, but obviously the older as they get, you can continue to just do that more and more. So they can still rely on you and you're still supporting them, but you're comfortable, and it might be uncomfortable at times, like you were saying, Erin, to step back and let them lead. But I find often I'm like, go ahead, let's see. Like I get curious about it. Right. And if they're, you know, it's often when they're, it's when they're willing, when you see that there's an opportunity for them and they're kind of like, you can almost see they're ready for it. And you just, you're like, go ahead. And they go. It's really, I think that that's a really important part. I don't know that we give, you know, that message to parents often enough, that that's kind of part of it. So that part really stood out to me.
Mm-hmm. What if the kids are better leaders than us sometimes? That to recognize that sometimes they're coming from somewhere that we never came from, that I always think that I've learned so much from listening to my kids, because they didn't come through the school system. They didn't come through traditional parenting. And so I'm held back a lot. Well, I guess I've come a long way, but I've had to throw away so many false ideas, which they never picked up in the first place. So sometimes we can actually learn from our kids, and they make better leaders in certain situations than we do. And to have that humility to say, well, I you're better at that than me, you lead. Or again, we're coming back to us as parents and how we're changing and how we are allowing our kids to take that role, because not just because it's fair or we want to give them practice, but because they could be actually better at it in certain situations than we are, and we can learn from our kids. And that does us good as well, doesn't it? That not always one way that we're guiding our kids. They're actually guiding us. And I find that happens more and more, that I'm listening to my adult children and thinking, they've come from a different place than I did at their age. And they're a long way ahead in some ways. And I'm interested to find out what they would do, what they're thinking. There's nothing like an adult child who trusts you saying, what do you think, Mum? I've got this idea, this problem. What do you think? And I always know that they already know what to do. They're including me in that, but they genuinely want to hear. And that's a lovely captain-crew relationship with a trust going both ways. But there are times when we don't have the answers for them, because they can come up with their better answers for themselves. I've rambled there now. I ramble more than you, Hayley. You said that a couple of times, I think. I've been rambling on. You weren't rambling, by the way, but I do sometimes. But that's a good thing, isn't it, that you were talking about inspiration, and that by having conversations like this and sharing ideas, and then we start to articulate them, and we're pondering as we're talking, not necessarily have we got a page here of fully formed things that we want to say. We're working with each other to come to sometimes to come up with answers, as Erin was saying, about things we don't really know, that we're, is this the way it's working? What have we learnt? We're all putting our input in here and learning together as we're discussing, not so much as we're all the experts that we want to go out there and we know it all, and this is a conversation where everybody's going to listen and benefit from our expertise, as much as we're sharing what we know, but we're also learning.
Yeah, and I hope that these rambling conversations are really helpful for people. And I hope there is a lot of comfort in that sense, that you know, that fact that you don't have to, you know, we know that we don't know everything. And sometimes there's a lot of fear in showing that, especially when you take on the responsibility for home education. You know, this idea that, you know, that thing about, how can you do it if you're not a teacher, that kind of thing. I hope there's some comfort in people recognizing that it is fine that you don't know everything, because none of us do know everything. And we all know that, really. We just often have that fear of other people judging us, thinking that makes us unable to do this. Whereas, you know, teachers are often only one page ahead of children in their class in the workbook. You know, no teacher knows everything, and we all know that. It's just so I hope there is comfort for people in that, and that all our rambling is contributing to something positive in the world.
I have one more ramble, and hopefully it won't be rambling, but touch on, what everybody said just kind of spoke to me, but I got thinking about this leadership piece and how we like, do we potentially have this idea of leading, that we lead beyond when we need to lead? So I think about a child learning to walk. And so we help them a little bit. We give them a hand. We watch to see, as they're just learning to take a few steps, they kind of make their way from piece of furniture to piece of furniture. And we keep an eye on them and support them a little bit in that. But it takes very little time for most kids before not only are they walking, but I often think about this, in a few short years, they can often run faster than most adults can. So you go from really supporting this young toddler from falling to really being aware that if your 8-year-old takes off in a crowd, you might have a hard time catching up with them. So I guess thinking about what you said there, Sue, kids do surpass for various reasons. I mean, that's a physical development thing. But I think about it as our kids get older. And so thinking about, what's my role with young adult kids, or what was my role as kids reach their later teens? And I think it went from feeling like you needed to lead in some of those safety situations, or maybe make sure that you were exposing kids to certain opportunities. And as my kids got older, I thought, okay, well, now there's all these other things. There's like life values, and there's, political thinking and life skills. And like you, Sue, it's really interesting to see how often our kids at a relatively young age are clearer on things than we are, or they do know more. And I just wanted to share this experience I had on the weekend. We had been a part of a social gathering, and it turned, not my family, but there were a couple people there. A political conversation began, and it went on and on. And it was like, it was pretty strong, because we all know there's a lot politically happening right now, right? So it was partly American, it was partly Canadian. It started going into our province and how things were run there. And so it went on and on. So my kids didn't say anything. We came back from the gathering, and they had a lot of opinions about kind of what had happened and what had transpired. And they felt quite differently than the people who'd been speaking. I actually felt similar to the people who'd been speaking. I just felt it was unfortunate that it had to take over the conversation. Anyway, I learned so much. We ended up having like a 2-hour conversation, and they presented ideas that I had not at all thought about based on my particular exposure and the reading that I've been doing. And it went beyond kind of like political choices. It got into the history of various countries and the history of relationships between various countries. And I thought to myself, how on earth do they know all of this? Like, how do they know all this like history of all, North Korea and Russia and these relationships? And not that we didn't do a lot of, so I kind of did this thing, you'll see after political debates where they have fact checkers. So after the conversation, I just started looking stuff up, because I was like, oh my goodness, like they think they know a lot. So I started looking stuff up, and I was like, wow, they've really been researching far beyond the immediate politics to like the history of various countries and those relationships. And it's really been humbling me lately that I just had this idea that so much of what they would know would be what I introduced them to. And it's also uncomfortable. I still don't agree with them completely around some of the things they were saying, but that's not really the point. The point is that they're thinking for themselves, and they have kind of moved quite far beyond what my knowledge is about those particular situations. So anyway, Sue, that's just what it brought up for me, that it's like, it's beyond even just sort of, is somebody know more about cooking, or does like they are sometimes developing these huge masses of information that we don't even really know about. So it kind of, yeah, the whole thing just fascinates me. And the last thing that I wanted to say that I had written down was just to your point, I think, Ashley, like when we're talking about leadership, like respectful leadership to me is in service to the people that are being led. rather than for your own power and control. So I think that is, for me, the distinction. If I'm in a situation where, as a captain, I look a bit different than the crew, because lots of times I haven't, we've just been cruising along together. But in those moments that I would be more distinct, I would hope it was because I was, well, a lot of the things that you said, Haley, I think, like you're in service to those, you're in service to that crew who are your children, rather than trying to manipulate a particular outcome. So that was a lot. So
good.
Anyway, that's it for me. Does anybody else have anything to add before we sign off?
I'm so much more to say, isn't there?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm so glad you're back, Haley. And it was so nice that you could join us, Sue.
Oh, thank you for the invitation. I was thinking there back about 15 minutes ago, and Haley was saying, perhaps we ought to stop and then come back and talk about the second half. And I'm nodding my head and then thinking, but maybe they'll invite another person to be the guest for the second half.
All your thoughts.
Maybe
we need
your
thoughts.
Maybe I won't get a chance to discuss it.
We would love to have you back, Sue. We've got, you know what, I think now that we have a little bit of our time zones are lining up okay now. So for a while, so we'll have to maybe do this again. And then, because I do think there's more we could talk about. And I think if anything, we've kind of probably figured out that we continue to ponder all this stuff. And hopefully that helps people be a little gentler about the toward unschooling parents. We're not this group of people, at least we aren't here shouting it has to be this way. We're just really coming at it with our hearts for our kids and kind of trying our best.
And hopefully it'll also help people to be gentler on themselves as well sometimes, because we have such high expectations for ourselves, don't we? And it's good to remember those things, that we don't have to know everything, and that, you know, we're still learning, and that's okay. We have our own journey, just like our children have their journey. And
yeah, absolutely. Okay. Well, I was going to say good night, everybody, but good day to you, Sue.
Thank you.
It was so good.
Thank you so much for inviting me to be on this episode. And I really have enjoyed chatting with you all and seeing you, Haley. It's good to see your smile again.
Thank you. I'm so glad to be back with you all. It's been really lovely. And I feel very honoured that you've been discussing my blog, that we've been discussing my blog post. Thank you.
Yeah. It worked out well today. All right. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
And this ends our conversation today. We hope you found it interesting and helpful. If you'd like to connect further or see additional content, Erin can be found on the web and on Instagram at Everlearning. Ashley can be found on Instagram at Ashley as Mama and Storytime Shelves. And I, Hayley, can be found on the web and on Instagram at Taking a Kinder Path. We'd love it if you'd share this conversation with anyone you think might like it. And if you've enjoyed this episode, maybe you'd consider leaving us a review. We'd love to hear your thoughts. We're so grateful you made time in your day to listen to us chat. Thanks so much for listening.